Broadway's My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. It's the journey to the end of all the other streets in the world, this Broadway. You turn a corner and you're there. You walk slowly and you lean your heart against it. Then something explodes in your face and you run and you're one of the crowd. You shop for the kicks, the bargains, and the heartbreak. And inevitably you find it, one or the other, like I did. On the street of the tired apartment houses, a street leased on the premise that both parents should work so they can come home, smile bravely at each other, beat their children, then snore. It was 7 p.m. when I walked up to the second floor landing of the El Royale Apartments in answer to a call. Detective Mugovan was waiting for me.
There he is, Danny, on the floor over by the railing.
Uh-huh. Who is he?
Hey, why don't you people break it up? Go on, get back to your apartments. You read all about it in the paper.
Who is he, Mugovan?
Name's Harold Clark. Lives apartment 2C. Married, no children. Dead from 238 slugs in his chest. That's who he is.
Who killed him?
Tenant named Lloyd Ramey. Had the apartment right here, 2A. Blasted Mr. Clark right through the door. Two shots, connected with both. Here, see? Two shots right through the door, here and here.
Uh-huh. What about Lloyd Ramey?
Killer? Nothing. He shot Clark and took a fire escape exit through his own room.
What else, Mugovan? What about the rest of the tenants? Do they know anything about Ramey?
I asked them. They shake their heads. No.
Okay, ask them some more. You said Clark was married.
Yeah, his wife is home.
Thanks. Mrs. Clark. It's the police, Ms. Clark. I've got...
Please come in. Excuse the way I look.
Of course. Mrs. Clark,
what do you want me to say to you? Excuse the way I look? Excuse the way the apartment looks? The way my husband looks lying out there in the hall in his undershirt? What else can I say to you? I'm sorry about it.
I've got to ask you some questions.
I know all about that. Here, see? Right here. Detective, did you ever own a gun? Suspect, no, sir, I did not. Detective, did you shoot this man? Suspect, no, sir, I did not. Just like in these true type detective story magazines. I read them all the time. I know all about what you've got to do.
All right, then, it'll make it a lot easier.
If you're going to ask me, did I shoot my husband, I'm going to say, no, sir, I did not.
We know you didn't.
Don't be too sure. I was in Lloyd Ramey's apartment when it happened.
Oh? Tell me about it.
I went across the hall to borrow some tea bags from Mr. Ramey because my husband likes tea. I must have stayed more than 10 seconds because my husband got panicky and came after me. He knocked on the door. Mr. Ramey didn't even answer. He pulled out a gun and shot.
How well did you know Ramey?
For tea bags. With my husband, tea bags means I'm not being true blue.
Your husband was wrong, wasn't he?
My husband is dead. I guess that's pretty wrong. He knocked on the door and yelled to open it or he'd break it down, and now he's dead. Because he liked tea.
Dr. Sinsky, the technical boys are here, Danny.
Oh, good. I'm through here. Tell them to go to work.
Okay.
Now, look, you people, why don't you break it up? Why don't you go home to your own apartment?
They stood there, the tenants of the El Royale apartment, summoned by the violence, drawn by the clamor of the violent dead, drawn by the cold wind that had touched their throats and led them to the warmth of the spectacle. A child's harsh voice ordered his father to hoist him to his shoulder so he could see better. The father slapped him hard across the mouth. The child wailed and scurried down the corridor, and the father looked after him, his eyes filled with pain and confusion. And then emptying of these things, forgetting the child, remembering death. Mugovan had got one thing out of the tenants, the fact that Lloyd Ramey, the murderer, was known to a certain party, the party being the Wilkins Rental Agency on West 58th Street. The forms you had to fill out to get an apartment from them, your life was on a piece of paper in a wooden file box. Go ask Mr. Wilkins about Lloyd Ramey. He'll have it in the box. Mr. Wilkins did.
Committed murder, did he? It just goes to show you, Mr. Clover, you never know.
You found it?
Mm-hmm, I found it. It's right here to hand. Man tries his best, Mr. Clover. Tries to find a select clientele for his clients. Tries to judge a man by his clothes, his shifting eyes, the woman hanging on his arm. Good wrist, bad wrist. Man asks himself...
Mr. Wilkins.
Please, you're eating into my time. Permit me to eat into yours. Things they put on the questionnaire on the form so often lie, sheer lies.
All I want is...
I know. Information on one of my tenants, a murderer.
Whenever you feel up to it, Mr. Wilkins.
Thank you. According to my files, Lloyd Ramey is a man I never set eyes upon.
But you just told me that...
I know. But sometimes in my profession, as it must be in yours, there are extenuating circumstances.
Like what, Mr. Wilkins?
Like this letter from Lloyd Ramey.
Let me see it.
Patience, Mr. Clover. This letter is an extenuating circumstance because with it came the money for a year's lease on apartment 2A, El Royal Apartments. We find questionnaires, personal interviews, unnecessary when a gentleman has the foresight to...
What else does it have?
A few well-wrought phrases stating that he, Mr. Lloyd Ramey, had seen our ad in the news, had gone to the apartment, found it suitable to his needs, and enclosed fined 8 years' rent. Dated September 3rd, 1950. From that day forward, we rejected all other applicants.
Give it to me.
I must, I suppose, hate to part with it. This letterhead... It brought joy into our lives here at the agency. Isn't it joyful? Yes, Berkey Siegmiller, tattoos, and the slogan. What you want, where you want it. Joyful, huh?
Take a chair. I'll be right with you as soon as I finish with this sailor. Now, hold still, sailor boy.
My name's Danny Clover.
Hiya, Danny. You can look at the patterns on the wall. We're having a special this week on Mother. You know, M is for the, O is for
I'm from the police.
I can give you a special on that, too. P is for the, O is for the... What's the matter with you, sailor boy? Be brave.
Is your name Berkey Siegmiller?
Yeah. Hey, you ain't got that tattoo look in your eye. You don't want to get tattooed, do you?
I want some information.
Look, sailor boy. If you don't hold still, you're going to have the strangest-looking mermaid on your chest in the Navy. What kind of information you want, Danny?
A man came in here about 4 weeks ago and used your stationery. Here, stationery from your place.
Oh, yeah, I recall the request. Man dropped in for a touch-up job of a coiled rattlesnake. And he asked me for a sheet of paper. When I was done, I gave it to him. You got the one I gave him in your hand.
Had you ever seen the man before?
No. What's he done?
Murder?
That's a new one. Did an admiral once, but never a murderer. Okay, button up your shirt, sailor boy.
Have you any idea where I can find this man?
There's no use you asking me any more questions, Danny, because I couldn't give you any more answers. Just tattoos. That's all I give.
Danny? Danny, it was I, you're ever faithful.
Hello, Gino.
Likewise, I'm sure.
Well?
You seem lost, Danny.
Huh?
Lost in some reverie into which perhaps it is implied that I intrude my face.
That's all right. You can stay.
Thank you.
Well?
You sure it's all right?
What's eating you?
Danny, the rumor is making its way through the nooks and crannies of police headquarters that you have lately visited a tattoo parlor.
Rumor is right.
Danny, you have not gone and indulged yourself in some mad whim or other. You have not...
You don't approve, Gino?
Well, it is not for me to approve or not to approve, Danny. It is only that in a like circumstance, Mike Schreck, the bald-headed miracle detective from Philadelphia...
He is tattooed?
You guessed it. In the middle of his forehead, the tattoo of a snow crystal, imprinted there by a high lama hailing from Tibet. Mike Schreck has regretted this indiscretion all his life.
So?
So? Well, I don't want the same thing to happen to you, this regret. Danny, I won't breathe a word if you...
I know I can trust you, Sergeant. Now, in the matter of Lloyd Ramey, you have something for me? Gino.
In the matter of Lloyd Ramey... Oh, yeah. In the matter of Lloyd Ramey, the usual standard operating procedure. All points, bulletins, terminals, watched, and relays. Nothing. Hey, you can't just barge in here, lady. You have
It's all right, Gino. You want to see me, Miss Clark?
Not particularly. I only thought that if you were cracking your skull over the murder of my husband, maybe I could help.
Sit down, Miss Clark.
There isn't time to be la-di-da with me, Mr. Clover. If you want to capture him, you better hurry. He was just beginning the soup course when I spotted him.
Lloyd Ramey? Where?
Don't panic yourself, Mr. Clover. Not Lloyd Ramey, but a man who was often a caller at the apartment of Lloyd Ramey. Ramey was such a secretive type, I took mental notes on his callers.
Where is this man?
Beginning a meal at the Hotel Adams. I dropped in there myself for a bite. While waiting for a table, I spotted him. Who could eat? I ran quick to you with a hot clue clutched tight in my little hand. You want it?
You'll point him out to me, won't you, Mrs. Clark?
Why else do you think I missed my dinner? There he is, Mr. Clover.
Which one?
There, near the back of the room. Man sitting at the small table against the wall.
You wait here. Mind if I sit down, mister?
Mm-hmm. Oh, sit down. Have a drink, quiet. Sit down, sir.
Thanks. I'm from the police.
Why don't you bring your lady, too? I see you come with the lady. Go back and get the lady. I'm not feeling so good, but who needs it to talk with a lady? Lady.
You're sick.
Sick. Drunk. Sick. Drunk. Go. Go get the. Get the lady.
Hey. We'd better get you to. I lifted his head up from the table and his eyes were open. Open and staring and not reacting to anything in the world and his part of it. The maitre d' hurrying over the polite music, the finger bowls and the demi-tasse and the fillets. None of it registered. He just slumped to the floor. I knelt over him. Felt for a pulse. There wasn't any. He was dead.
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, and starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. This Sunday, Frank Sinatra joins Arthur Godfrey and the other fine entertainers and programs to be heard on CBS in the afternoons. His new show is called Meet Frank Sinatra, and you'll hear members of Frank's studio audience being interviewed by The Voice and telling him their favorite songs. At their request, Frank either will sing the song himself or play a famous record. Meet Frank Sinatra will bring you a surefire entertainment for a whole hour, starting this Sunday afternoon on most of these same CBS stations.
Broadway is generous in many ways. It offers you for free its own private set of values, for instance. The essence of a man's life, his worth, measure it in terms of darkness and light. Big man, big Mazda bulb shining bright. So many yards of neon hissing his name into the screaming night. Little man, his proper share of darkness. A spectacular with burned out bulb sighing into nothing. Harold Clark, the man shot down because he had pounded on a door. That was a little man. The man at a dinner table who hadn't recognized the feel of death, who thought he was only drunk. Also a little man. As witness how discreetly the management tried to hide his dying from the diners. Hardly worth Broadway's notice. Hardly worth interrupting the choice of a pastry. But at police headquarters, he found his importance. Under a microscope, in a test tube, a hooded light bulb shining down on his death, giving it shape, shining down on the white-coated figure who ran it through his fingers, analyzed it.
This is it, Danny. This is what did it to him. The cliche of poison.
It bores you, huh, Gordon?
If you ask me, Danny, I'll tell you. Such an unoriginal poison. Cheap, common. It can be boring.
How was it administered?
I've been waiting for you to ask me.
Get off it, Gordon.
Well, you surprised me, Danny. I should have thought it was normal routine that you ask questions at the hotel bar. It was slipped into his drink. I have proof positive. You didn't ask questions?
If it makes you any happier, yeah, I did. The bartender couldn't remember him. Couldn't remember anybody. That's why he's worked this so long, he said, because he couldn't remember faces.
Tough. That makes it tough on you, doesn't it, Danny? You think Lloyd Ramey did our fellow in?
What else have you got, Gordon?
It's all over there in that pile. Help yourself.
You do it, Gordon.
Because you're a lieutenant? Still? All right. I'll do it for you, lieutenant. His clothes tailored, his wallet alligator, his driving license wrapped in cellophane. It says he had brown eyes, was 5'11", age 36. It says he lived at 2354 East 47th, that his name was Henry Gaynor. You can stop me anytime, lieutenant.
Nothing else?
Nothing. Except this package of orange lifesavers. Have one, Danny. Come on, have one. I'll analyze them. They're harmless. Orangey.
Goodbye, Gordon.
Not at all. Lloyd Ramey, lieutenant. How are you doing on that one? Oh, you're very welcome, lieutenant.
Hello there. Good morning.
Hello. My name's Danny Clover.
Well, let's come in. Chat inside. There now. Isn't this better? Sit down. Try that chair over there, the flowered cretonne.
Thanks. I started to say I was from the police.
Well, I don't understand.
There's nothing to understand. Police, that's who I work for.
But why do you want to see me?
By the way, who are you?
Tommy Lawrence.
You live here with Henry Gaynor?
I did live here with Henry Gaynor. He's dead. I read about it in the late editions. Oh, that's why. Henry's dead, and you're the police, and you've come here. Oh, that's why.
That's why. Tell me about Henry.
Well, I advertised in the paper for a clean-living man to share this apartment. I chose Henry.
Uh-huh.
But I made a mistake. I learned not to like him. That's why I'm not outraged or worried or sorry that Henry's dead. He did nothing but dote on girls. He and his buddy.
Buddy?
Well, that chaser, Frank Muir. If you want his address, I don't know it. But his phone number's around. You think you can trace it? Frank Muir. I'd track him down where I were you. He's the cause of it all. Poor Henry.
I detached him from his cretonne grief, made him look for Frank Muir's phone number. He found it on a pad next to the phone. He did that by lifting up a French doll, and there it all was. Surprise. I phoned Muir. He was at home. I told him to stay there. He said he had a date. I tinkled my badge into the receiver. He said he'd break the date. When I got there, he was still doing it.
Come on in, Mr. Clover. Mix yourself up a happy-happy at the bar. This lady I'm talking to on the phone, she's bitter. She don't believe I got a rendezvous with a policeman. Yeah. Sure, honey. I swear it's only a cop.
A cop? What kind of a cop? I know all the cops.
For 20 minutes you've been holding up the phone, honey. Here. Yeah, I'll prove it to you.
Prove it to me. Go ahead.
Say something to my lady. Prove to her you're only a man cop.
Hang up.
But, well, come on, put him on, you
well,
dear.
Well, look, be a pal.
Hang up.
Between the two of you, she'll fracture me. I don't do this sort of thing to ladies normally, you understand, Mr. Clover?
You had a friend, Henry Gaynor.
You can say that again. Had is just the word. I read in the papers how a friend I once had is now gone.
When did you see him last?
You think I killed him? When Henry and me had such snazzy times together on blind dates, on with your eyes open dates.
When did you see him last?
On the occasion when I turned over Mrs. Ellen Clark to him.
What?
You heard me. That was 3, maybe 4 Saturdays ago. I make it 4.
Mrs. Clark was one of your lady friends, like...
Don't get me wrong, Mr. Clover. Mrs. Clark was, how do you classify? A smile filled with hidden meanings. The touch of a knee under a checkered tablecloth. That was all Mrs. Clark was to me.
That's why you handed her over to your buddy?
Wrong again. You see that plaster cast up there on the mantelpiece? That's courtesy of irate husband, Mr. Clark. He found me once with his missus waiting to catch a bus. He clobbered me, broke my arm. Care to autograph it, Mr. Clover? All my friends, eh? No? Oh, you'll excuse me. It's undoubtedly...
Thank you.
Danny. How you feeling?
Yeah, there have been better times, Mugovan.
There always are. Seen the papers?
Uh-uh. Haven't had the time.
You should have looked.
What have you got in your mind, Mugovan?
You don't have to bite my head off because I suggest you read the papers. It's got a picture of Lloyd Ramey on the front page.
What?
Yep. Only his name isn't Lloyd Ramey. The name is George Harvey. Something, huh?
You want me to invest a nickel in a newspaper, or you want to tell me why?
We took the two bullets from the body of Harold Clark and checked the riflings of what we got on file. We didn't have anything.
So?
Sent them to Washington. FBI checked. Sent a wire back. They got what the two bullets matched. Two more bullets.
Where'd they get them?
One of them out of a murdered bank clerk of Vincennes, Indiana. The other from a woman shot down during a liquor store robbery in St. Louis. Both shootings done by George Harvey, wanted by Indiana, Missouri police for murder. What does it do to you, Danny?
Does a whole lot, Mugovan.
May I come in?
What are you looking for, mister?
I'm Joseph Gribness. May I come in?
What's on your mind, Mr. Gribness?
Thank you. Who do I see about the reward?
Reward?
Yeah, it says right here in the paper, reward. And don't you people try to talk your way out of it either. You see? Right here on the front page. Have you seen this man, it says. I've seen this man. What about the reward?
If there's a reward, we'll see that you get it. Where did you see him?
Where'd you see him, yes. Where's the reward?
The man in charge of the reward department's just stepped out.
I'll wait.
Sure, wait. But if George Harvey escapes while you're waiting, you'll be held for... What'll he be held for, Mugovan?
Aiding and abetting a criminal.
Aiding and abetting a criminal.
Aiding and abetting a criminal. The man whose picture appears in the paper moved in this morning next door to me. Hotel Hobart, into the hall, third floor. And I'll just wait.
Down the end of the hall, the man said.
That's what Mr. Griven has said, Danny.
Here.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you want?
Come on, open up, Harvey. Move away from the door, Mugovan. Open the door, I'll break it down.
You cops still there? Or are you dead?
Shoot the lock off the door, Mugovan.
I'll kick it open.
Let's go. Harvey.
No one's home. Come back later.
Danny, in that hallway.
Yeah. You better call an ambulance, Mugovan.
Okay, Danny.
And turn the radio off.
What do you know? There was somebody home.
Can you talk, Harvey?
I just talked, didn't I? You cops been chasing me all over the country just to chat with me. Advertised me in post offices, detective magazines, and the radio.
Why did you kill Harold Clark?
You pounded on my door. You saw what happened. I thought he was a cop. Yell open the door, I'll break it down. Cops talk like that.
Did you poison a man named Henry Gaynor?
I'm losing blood, cop. Pity me.
Did you poison a man named Henry Gaynor?
Poison? Never in my life. Henry Gaynor? Never in my life.
One more question, Harvey. Was Mrs. Clark in your apartment when you killed her husband?
You kidding? That's one of the tough things about running all the time. You never have time for a dame. She wasn't in my apartment.
You're sure?
I'm confessing a murder, mister. But don't try to book me for a dame in my apartment. Because Mrs. Clark wasn't there.
Yes? Oh, it's you, Mr. Clover. I know. You've come to tell me you've got my husband's murderer. Did you bring me some good news like that?
I'll come in and tell you about it, Mrs. Clark.
I was just going to ask you to do that. My apartment looks better now, doesn't it?
How does a woman feel when the man she loves is murdered?
I felt numb at first, but I'm getting better. Harold, my husband was a jealous man. Harold was always...
I'm not talking about your husband. I'm talking about Henry Gaynor.
Who?
The man you poisoned after he refused to have anything to do with you. You poisoned him and brought me there to watch him die.
You're crazy.
Before you killed Gaynor, did you tell him how you arranged your husband's murder?
You invited yourself in, now invite yourself out. What are you doing? What are you walking around my place for?
Place looks nice.
Thanks. Get out.
Really looks a lot better. Neat. Things in order. Where are all those true type detective story magazines?
I gave them away. A man came, offered me a dollar for all those magazines I had. I gave him 5 bundles wrapped in twine.
Did you save one of them?
What?
The one with a picture of George Harvey, alias Lloyd Ramey. What did it say under his picture? That he was armed, that he was wanted for murder, that he was dangerous, not to approach him, but to notify the police?
Get out of here.
You knew your husband was bitterly jealous. You goaded him, made him believe you were carrying on with a neighbor across the hall.
Get out.
You sent him over there knowing that trigger-happy killer would shoot him as soon as he knocked on the door, and Harvey did.
I'll kill you.
Harvey said you were never in his apartment. You were too frightened of him ever to talk to him. Let's go, Mrs. Clark.
Take your hands off me.
I said, let's go, Mrs. Clark.
I had it all. I had it in the palm of my hand until you...
Come on, Mrs. Clark.
Look, you've got to understand. My husband was jealous. He spoiled everything. Every man I ever looked at. You don't know how it was. He ruined everything. He spoiled everything.
It's the street of the hunter, Broadway, and the smile that's dropped at the tip of a hat. And the lights are flung from windows, out of doorways. You walk a pavement speckled with 1,000 colors. But between the lights, that's where the darkness is. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway. My beat. Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia. The program was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with musical score composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. Included in tonight's cast were Kathy Lewis, Vivi Janis, Anthony Barrett, Leo Cleary, Jack Crucian, and Ed Max. Jack Smith, Dinah Shore, Margaret Whiting, Bob Crosby, the Andrews Sisters, Lowell Thomas, Beulah, Ed Murrow. Anywhere else, they'd make up an all-star list for a week. But at CBS, the Stars address, you can hear them every evening, Monday through Friday. Yes, every weekday evening, most of these same CBS stations bring you these top-ranking stars in their specialties. Music, comedy, top reporting. Be listening for Jack Smith, Dinah Shore, and Margaret Whiting. For Bob Crosby and the Andrews Sisters, for Beulah, and for those great radio reporters, Lowell Thomas and Edward R. Murrow. Dan Coverly speaking. This is CBS, where yours truly, Johnny Dollar, brings adventure Saturday nights on the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Ladies and gentlemen, the American Broadcasting Company brings to its entire network one of radio's most unusual programs. Pat Novak for Hire.
That's what the sign out in front of my shop says. Pat Novak for hire. Down here on the San Francisco waterfront, it's got to be that way. You got to rob a few graves if you want cigarette money. You need lots of work and roomy sleeves if you're going to play a pat hand. Sometimes, in a good week, you can duck trouble 3 or 4 days in a row. And then it creeps up on you like an old charge account. Well, I should have known that when I went to the bank. I was up to my knees in mud and didn't even know it was rainy season. It was Tuesday. I went by the bank to drop $100. It was about time, because they were beginning to play handball with my checks. Must have been about 11 o'clock when I got to the window.
Hello, Mr. Novak. Isn't it a grand morning?
If it's your choice, stay with it.
Ah, yes.
Deposit $100.
Yes. Let me get your card. It's right here, I think. Yes. Here we are.
All right. $100. Give me a duplicate, will you?
Certainly. My, this isn't as big as the last deposit.
Look, Bloomer girl, just mark the slip, huh?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Novak. I guess I'm not used to $1,000 deposits.
Mm-hmm. What $1,000?
Your Friday deposit.
I wasn't in here Friday.
Oh, you must have been. The card says you put in $1,000 on Friday.
Give me that card. What did Santa look like?
What?
Who put the dough in? What'd the guy look like?
Oh, didn't you?
No. Look, we'll double back and try to hang on this time, will you? I wasn't in here Friday. I don't know anything about an extra grand. Now, what did the guy look like?
I wasn't on duty Friday.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure about the fellow today.
What fellow?
There was a man in here to ask about the account.
Did this good fairy have a name?
No, just credentials. He was from the FBI.
I see.
Is there anything wrong, Mr. Novak?
No, don't mind that complexion. I forgot my foundation cream. I should have known right then. A mysterious grand tossed into the till, and I didn't wake up to trouble. But I'm a smart boy who'd be the village idiot in a town the size of New York. Well, I left the bank and went up to my apartment. That $1,000 was already drawing interest. When I came in, she was sitting on the couch drinking my whiskey. She could have all she wanted. A 1949 Panther model. Just the right amount of size 12 and a dress that looked like a well-tailored fig leaf. When she was through looking you over, you felt like the Sunday supplement.
Hello, Mr. Novak. I like your apartment.
That's good.
The view is wonderful.
So is yours. What's on your mind?
How about a drink?
All right. I'll pour. You talk.
My name is Connie Riley. Make me one, too?
Sure. As you were saying?
My name is Connie Riley.
Yeah, well, I've memorized that much. Go on. Well, here's your drink.
Thanks. Now sit down.
All right.
Over next to me. I won't bite.
That's too bad. Go on.
Well, here's to your new bank account, Patsy.
Look, sis, if you're here just for the field trials, all right, but if you've got a bill of goods, trot it out.
I will. I want that card, too, Patsy. I want it ahead of Chris.
I'll catch up with another drink. In the meantime, you fill in and help me, will you?
Stop sitting on your hands, Angel. You didn't get that $1,000 with the sweat of your brow?
No, not yet.
Somebody padded your account so you'd be a nice boy. I want you to be a nice boy for me.
At the same rates?
The Monterey Rose docks today. A passenger named Kirk Toomey is carrying a jack of clubs, and it means a lot to me.
Well, it doesn't mean a thing to me, except the FBI is on my tail.
Mr. Novak, you're turning a momentary advantage into a crowbar.
You take your deal to some other broker.
You're in business whether you like it or not, Patsy. You're going to stub your toe either way, only for me, it'll be more fun.
How about the FBI?
You're being frightened by a group of bureaucrats.
Yeah, that's what Trotsky thought.
How much, Patsy?
Hmm?
How much for that card when you get it?
The price is a grand.
You're an amusing guy, Patsy.
Yeah, the grand I can afford to be.
You don't even know what the Jack of Clubs is all about. You never heard of Kirk Toomey till 5 minutes ago, but you take things in stride as if the whole world belonged to you.
Yeah?
You're like Adam when he first spotted the Garden of Eden.
All right, little Eve, it's $1,000. Remember, you're sitting on my doorstep. Now either go on home or come in the house.
Good. I'll take the card. At your price. Now I can relax.
Yeah. I'll bet you can.
Pour me another drink, Patsy?
Yeah, sure, in a minute.
What comes next? Can I get 3 guesses?
If you got time to take them.
I won't need them all.
Well, it's up to you. Come here, Angel. Did you ever hear of the early bird?
Do I make a nice worm?
You wriggle like one.
Aren't you raising the price a little, Mr. Novak?
Straight 18%, darling.
That's too bad. I wasn't even going to scream.
The next place I live is going to be a cave. Just a minute, will you?
Hello, Novak.
Oh, Hellman.
Well, well. Am I interrupting anything?
No, we were just going over an old seed catalog. Miss Riley, this is Inspector Hellman, San Francisco Police.
Good morning, Inspector. Don't bother to arrest me now. I'm just leaving.
So soon?
My sentiments exactly, Inspector. Bye-bye, Patsy. You can get me at the Concord on Bush Street. See you around, Patsy.
Sure.
Well, you're slipping, Novak.
Hmm?
No rain check.
All right, funny man. What's your problem?
You. You ever see this guy before?
Let me see. He's an awful-looking thug.
Yeah.
Who is he, your father?
A guy by the name of Max Coleman. The FBI trailed him to your bank Friday. They think he gave you $1,000.
Yeah.
Where'd you get the $1,000, Novak?
What do you care, Hellman? Maybe a relative. Maybe a maiden aunt.
Nobody's related to you, Novak. You're in a jam lover, and I'm here to push your father in. Max Coleman buys his groceries with foreign dough.
So what are you weeping about? Arrest the guy if you don't like him.
There's government microfilm coming in on the Monterey Rose. That $1,000 makes you a contact man for Coleman.
Send the FBI over then. Where do you fit in? Waiting for somebody to drop some loose change?
You're my project, Novak. When they asked us for help, I stuffed the ballot box to get you.
Yeah.
So relax. I'm going to spend the rest of the day here. You're not going to leave the living room.
If I got to spend the day with you, I'll take knockout drops.
Suit yourself. What's this stuff?
That's good scotch. You wouldn't know.
Oh.
The cheap liquor's out in the kitchen closet. That's for you.
All right. Over by the stove here?
That's right.
What do you keep in here, Novak?
Mops and brooms.
Where'd you buy this one?
What are you talking about?
Where'd you buy this one, smart man?
Hellman was right. I could tell right away it wasn't a mop. When Hellman pushed him out, he rolled out onto the linoleum. A dapper little guy, except for a piece of cord around his throat, tied in a funny knot. He was deader than a broken drum. Somebody pulled too hard on that piece of cord. The veins were standing out in his forehead, and his face looked like a road map lying there on the floor. He wasn't pretty. Hellman thought so, too.
Who is he, Novak? Your father?
I've never seen him in my closet before.
Who is he, Novak?
I don't know, Hellman. Finders keepers, you roll him.
Give me a hand. There's nothing there. Where's his wallet?
You'll get there by instinct.
Yeah, here it is. Oh, his name is Kirk Toomey.
Well, that helps.
Who is he?
The guy on the Monterey Rose.
The one with the microfilm?
I guess so.
I thought you didn't know anything about it. How'd you know he came from the Monterey Rose?
My dream book, Hellman. What happens now?
Nothing. Except I'm on the case now, and you got trouble in a major key.
You don't think I killed this guy?
I don't know, did you?
You better hop out and tail that girl. She was making herself at home when I got here.
Yeah? How do I know you're not in it together?
You don't, copper. Maybe she's Loeb and I'm Leopold. When you're through with her, you might hit the Monterey and start looking for a jack of clubs.
Some more dream book, Novak?
Everybody's looking for a jack of clubs, Hellman. It must be the end of the rainbow. That's where you're going to find that microfilm.
In the meantime, you stay handy, Novak. I want to split you with the FBI.
You don't think I'm going to take the rap for Junior here, do you?
It says that in my book. Just relax until I'm ready to pick you up. I only have to find a couple of things.
Well, that'll be a long time, Hellman. You can't find your hip pocket with radar.
Yeah. I'll be around soon, Novak. Don't bother to pack your bags. You'll be traveling light.
Well, when Hellman left, I knew I was a second division club. That phony plant in the bank, the tie-up with Max Coleman, and that stiff in the kitchen made me look real bad. I had to do something in a hurry because the way things stood, I had about as much chance as a lawn party in a monsoon. There were a lot of bases to tag, so I looked up Jocko Madigan, an ex-doctor who invented the hangover, but a good guy. I finally found him over in North Beach at a little joint called Lupo's. He was eating pizza with one hand and strangling a bottle of wine with the other.
Hello, Patsy. Oh, Frank. A bottle of wine for Mr. Novak.
No, I'm short on time, Jocko.
That's where you're wrong, Patsy. People always say it, but it's a lie.
Will you calm down a minute?
You say you're short on time, but you have all the time there is. It's the one thing that keeps you from being a beggar.
Yeah.
There are only 24 hours in a day, and that gives you as much time as Napoleon or Alexander had.
Will you shut up a minute and put on that wine?
I'm celebrating, Patsy. I'm celebrating Mission Day.
Mission Day's over.
But I'm a native son. We celebrate longer.
Now, look, I'm behind the eight ball again.
Isn't it getting kind of crowded back there? What's the matter?
Somebody strangled a guy and put him in my broom closet.
When did you find him?
I didn't. Hellman did. There's a girl named Connie Riley. Looks good for the job.
Why doesn't Hellman book her, then?
He's still picking up the pieces. The dead guy is Kurt Toomey. He was set to smuggle in some microfilm. It says here I'm contact. You got to help me, Jocko.
You've got me confused with the travel agency.
I want you to hop down to headquarters. Get all the dope you can on this guy, Toomey. I'm going to look up Connie Riley.
How did she get in the picture?
What difference does it make? She's a wrestler I met this morning. Now, get on to headquarters, will you?
That's why I like you, Patsy. You're like a piece of blank verse. A bad piece of blank verse.
All right, Jocko. I'm going to make like a strip of bacon if I don't get going. Now, stay close to headquarters. If anything looks good, contact me at Connie Riley's here at this address.
All right. How many times shall I knock, lover?
I left Jocko and dropped by the apartment. I was smart and full of courage, like a field mouse at bay. The police had already been there. There was fingerprint powder all over, and the two bottles of whiskey were gone. They'd moved Laughing Boy out of the kitchen, so I sat down trying to add things up. I had a short list of friends to see. Connie, Max Coleman, and whoever this guy Chris was. I had to show up with one of them or prove that Kurt Toomey hung himself in my closet. I was getting ready to borrow a piece of cord myself when the phone rang. Yeah?
Hello, Novak. This is Hellman.
I'm thrilled. What's on your mind?
I just called on your girlfriend.
What'd she say?
Nothing. She wasn't there. Hasn't been there since 10 o'clock this morning.
That's funny.
Yeah. You know where she is?
How would I know?
I just thought she might be in your closet. I picked up Toomey's stuff on the Monterey Rose.
Yeah, what'd you find?
Well, the usual stuff. A few clothes, some shaving equipment, razor blades, toothpaste, and a pack of playing cards.
Pack of cards? Well, you know where to go from there, Hellman.
I thought I did.
Grab that jack of clubs.
Will a ten of hearts do?
Huh?
That's right, Novak. A nice, fat deck. But the jack of clubs is missing.
Oh, you're always too little, too late, Hellman.
I just thought I'd let you know, friend, in case you start a bridge game with 53 cards in the deck. Good night.
Oh, I was losing money fast, like a street carnival in Death Valley. Well, one of two things happened. Somebody got on that boat and took the jack of clubs while Toomey was at my apartment. Or maybe he brought it with him. If he brought it with him, Connie was a possibility. Or somebody that got there ahead of Connie. Well, anyway, I had to work fast now because whoever had that card wasn't going to put it on a Market Street float. About 10 minutes later, I cut across Union Square and up Bush Street. When I got to Connie's apartment, it was about 10 o'clock. I got in the back door and started through. She wasn't there, so I went to work looking for that jack of clubs. It was real easy. I tried the desk and then her bureau drawer. You know, that black chiffon's coming back in style because that's where I found the card. It looked nice nestling there. I put it in my pocket and that's as far as I got.
You run the lingerie counter here, Novak?
You sound like a guy named Chris.
If it makes you feel better.
Shall we put on the light?
No, no. Let's don't put on the light. This gun might upset you.
The police are looking for you, Chris. You need more than the dark.
I understand they're looking for you, Novak. That Riley girl kind of put you on the spot. Tell you what I'll do, though.
Yeah, you'll give me $1,000 for the jack of clubs.
I started to say 500.
Around here, that's a whisper. And even grand, mister.
You're trying to collect too many places. Want the 500?
No, I don't.
All right. But I think you're a bum businessman.
Jocko found me catnapping on Connie's bare rug. Must have been right after the sapping. When I woke up, Jocko was thumbing my head like a housewife with a bowl of margarine. I felt around and waited for him to put the floor in again. I reached in my pocket. The jack of clubs was gone. Then I started to talk. Jocko.
Did you expect someone better?
Help me up, will you?
I've helped you get up so much, I feel like one of the Wright brothers.
I just lost round three.
Yeah, I saw him getting into the car.
Did you get a number?
Like Hellman's got yours. Here it is.
Let me see. Anything break down at homicide?
They got all the dope on to me. They had to piece it together. He had no fingerprint record, and they finally confirmed things with a set of false teeth.
What does it prove?
Nothing much, except you probably killed him. He was a foreign agent who picked up microfilm at Shanghai. Your girlfriend is pretty.
Did they find her?
Yeah.
Dead?
No, Patsy, you've got to stop thinking of people as being dead all the time. It's demoralizing.
What'd she say?
She denied knowing anything about to me.
Jocko, I'm sure she killed that guy up in my apartment. I'd stake my life on it.
Expertly put, Patsy. I think Hellman believes her. After all, she's the only lead.
What about Max Coleman, the guy that rigged my bank account? Are they letting him die on the vine?
I was getting to that. Your friend Max Coleman has disappeared.
I thought he was being tailed.
The kite got away. Here, use my aspirin.
Well, I took a boat out to the Monterey Rose, but that was a waste of time. Hellman had it covered like a tarpaulin. I still had the license number to Chris's car, but that didn't do any good. Even if I found him, all I could do was point my finger. There were still a lot of things that didn't fall into place. One of them was, how come that jack of clubs was so easy to find in Connie's apartment? She hadn't hid it very well. But after all, maybe that was a habit with her. Well, things didn't look any better the next morning. I went into a restaurant next to the press club for some breakfast. The Chronicle was lying on the counter. We were in second place because it was a torso murder all over page one. That second cup of coffee saved me because right after that, I spotted it on one of the back pages, a picture and a small story about some unidentified guy who'd been killed over in Oakland. Couldn't match the picture too well with Hellman's snapshot of Max Coleman, but it looked like my best break so far. I got over to Oakland, and I went straight to the morgue. The guy in the morgue was chatty.
Which fella you want to see?
The unidentified guy. He must have come in last night.
Sure. Down this way.
Okay.
How do you like our morgue?
One of my favorites.
It's bigger than San Francisco.
Yeah, I figured that.
Sure. Most people don't know that, but it's true. Bigger than San Francisco. Here we are. Right here. Help me slide it out.
Sure.
Roller bearings makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Here, let me get that sheet.
All right. Well, well.
Recognize him?
Yeah. What time did he die?
Coroner's report here on the toe tag. About 11 o'clock last night. Two gunshots. 38 caliber pistol.
That's good.
Don't look good to me. Was he a friend of yours? Relative or something?
Yeah, a relative. He's my maiden aunt. It was Max Coleman, all right, but that was only half the problem. I had some of the answers, but not enough. It's like trying to weave a rug with a spinning wheel and a bucket of sand. Well, anyway, I got to a payphone and I called Jocko. I told him to run down that license number, and then I headed back across the bridge. When I found Jocko, he said the car was registered in the name of Christopher Downs, who lived up on Taylor Street. Well, that was enough of a lead, so I telephoned Hellman. Took about a half a minute to draw a map.
Hello? Hellman talking.
This is Novak. You still got Connie Riley down there?
No. I saved matchboxes. Why?
When did she leave?
Last night, about 9:30.
Oh, that was smart, Hellman.
Why?
You better put a guard on her front door and get up to 720 Taylor Street, the apartment of Christopher Downs.
Who's he?
A late entry. Now climb out of that coma and get going. I'll meet you up there in 10 minutes.
720 Taylor Street?
Yeah, it's up on the hill.
That's good, Novak. I can roll you all the way down.
When Jocko and I got up to Downs' apartment, there was nobody home. I said a fast prayer for Connie, and I began going through Downs' stuff for a .38 caliber revolver. Jocko was looking, too, over in the liquor cabinet. That's as far as we got.
Scavenger hunt, Mr. Novak?
Hello, Chris. You haven't seen a .38 around?
Just one. It's in my pocket.
The same one that killed Max Coleman?
You're gonna run out of breath, Novak. Slow down.
I'm in second already, mister. I can't stop.
Then you won't mind a short ride. Out the door and down the back stairs.
Should we bring the lap robe?
There's nothing to worry about. It's a short trip. You won't even have to wire the folks.
We went down the back way and into the garage next door. We started for a big car in the corner.
All right. Get in. Out the airport road, Joe.
Sure.
Now relax, Novak. From here, you look like a duck in the pond. All right, Joe.
Watch out, Joe. Joe, watch out. There's another car coming in.
You're right, Chris. It was a short ride.
You all right, Novak?
Stop acting like the mother hen, Hellman. Take this guy's gun.
All right, mister. Get out. Who is he?
Christopher Downs. He killed Max Coleman last night.
Does he convince you, mister?
Not entirely.
Well, that .38 will. The Oakland police have two slugs that fit that gun. You need more?
No. I'm afraid you've got all the trumps, Novak.
All right, let's go, you.
Let's see you earn it, copper.
Stop him, Novak!
He ain't going far. Well, Hellman. Now you can arrest him for jaywalking.
Yeah.
Too bad. He could have told you a lot about that stuff in my closet. Well, go pick him up, Hellman, and don't forget that jack of clubs in his pocket. Well, it worked out all right. I left Hellman, dropped by headquarters to leave a note, and I went home to my apartment. Connie was there. The whiskey was out again. Oh, she looked real good sitting there in a white crepe dress. It was one of those tight-fitting babies that make a bathing suit look like a toga. I told her all about Chris and Max Coleman. And we forgot about everything but the Olympics. When she put her arms around you, it was a real squeeze. It felt like an old tube of shaving cream. I was pouring a drink when the doorbell rang. Hello, Hellman.
You ready, Novak?
Sure. Well, don't stand there gaping. Arrest her for murder.
Wait a minute. Slow down, Patsy.
Sorry, chum. It's you or me.
Now, be a nice boy.
I am. That's why you go to Hellman.
Come on, lady.
You dig up an answer for that guy that you left in my closet?
I didn't leave any guy in your closet.
You'll have to say it louder, baby. They found the story about the cord.
That cord came out of your kitchen.
You're a big mouth, Connie.
Yeah. You can put that in boldface. How did you know?
You're the only one that could have taken that jack of clubs here in the apartment. That and one other thing.
Yeah?
That knot in the cord was a funny knot. You got an elastic garter there. It's too big, so you tied a knot in it. The same funny knot that choked Kirk Toomey.
You're a funny guy, Novak.
Yeah?
You're nice. But you're hard to handle. I should have killed you or married you. Ready, Hellman?
Jack of clubs was a phony right from the start. Somebody told Kirk Toomey to deal with me. When he came to my apartment, Connie was waiting. She got jumpy and killed him. I got there too soon, so she had to stall me off. When she got home, she found out that the Jack of clubs was a phony. She left it in plain sight, and Chris gobbled up the bait. When he discovered there was no microfilm, he went gunning for Max Coleman. Max was an innocent thief lying low, waiting to buy it from me. So, all three of them were after a phony card. I began to suspect it was phony because everybody hung around. If it was the McCoy, Connie would have cleared out. Same for Chris. The microfilm? Well, it was in Hellman's desk, but he didn't know it. Jocko finally tumbled. The report said that Kirk Toomey had false teeth. And when Hellman picked up his stuff on the ship, it was a tube of toothpaste. You don't clean false teeth with toothpaste. Word must have gotten around that the microfilm was inside that jack of clubs, so Kirk crossed him up and put it in the tube of toothpaste. Well, that's all except they canceled my $1,000 deposit. Hellman said it was lucky I noticed her garter. Lucky? Well, she had to straighten her seams, didn't she?
The American Broadcasting Company has just brought you the second of a new series, Pat Novak for Hire, starring Jack Webb. Jocko Madigan is played by Tudor Owen. Inspector Hellman is played by Raymond Burr. Music was composed and conducted by Radio and Television Life Award winner Basil Adlam. In our cast were Betty Lou Gerson, Victor Perrin, Ted DeCorsia, and Herb Butterfield. Today we're happy to welcome a new member of the ABC family as station KARM in Fresno, California, joins our network. And now this is George Fenneman reminding you to be with us again next week when over most of these same ABC stations we'll bring you Pat Novak or Hire. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
The F.W. Fitch Company presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Back a while, let us all be your style, use Fitch shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair, use Fitch Shampoo.
The F.W. Fitch Company, makers of Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo and Ideal Hair Tonic, presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Rogue speaking. This Saturday night, I'm going spellbind, you about. Caught me while spending a week and the fee from my last case in zestful living at a summer hotel, which was so swanky that the help hardly spoke to the guests. For $25 a day, I had one of the 50 bungalows on the hotel grounds. For 30, I could have had one with a window. Well, anyway, there was a girl up there. Isn't there always? She was named Janice Cole, a sort of a social secretary to the hotel. She was about 28, Her eyes were so big and blue they made you think of mountain lakes, and her hair was as black as a jealous rage. She had a figure that made you think you'd seen her before in a swimsuit. Oh, she was real quality. Much to my high blood pressure, she was engaged to a society playboy with a dollar for every suntan in Florida, and his name was Clint Hayes. There was dancing going on in the ballroom of the hotel, and Janice was dancing with Clint. But she was watching me. I thought I saw fear in her eyes. They finished their dance right in front of me. Well, I certainly enjoyed that exhibition, Clint.
Glad you liked it, Rogue. Dancing with Janice is a wonderful way to spend an evening.
I believe that. Well, how about the next one, Janice?
Oh, I can't, Richard. I don't feel very well.
Oh, really, darling?
Yes, I think I'll go to my cabin, Clint. I have a terrible headache.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, dear. Is there anything I can get for you?
I've got some aspirin.
Oh, no. I think I'll just lie down for a while. I'll be back as soon as I feel a little more like enjoying the party.
After Janice Cole left, I ducked Clint and mingled with the crowd, fencing in and out of polite conversation and keeping up a gay front to cover the worry which was stampeding around in my mind. I couldn't forget the lost look in the eyes of Janice Cole, a look that was so full of fear and hopelessness that it haunted me. I decided, after sweating out 30 minutes of wondering why she was so frightened, to drop by her bungalow and have a fatherly chat with her. I casually worked my way along a chain of conversations to the open door and faded unobtrusively out into the night. There was a light in Janice's bungalow. I walked rapidly toward it. The door was ajar. When I knocked on it, it swung open. And I saw Janice lying there, a red pool expanding on the Navajo rug under her head. I took a few steps into the room.
Oh!
I was on the inside of a giant bell, clinging to the clapper with the strength of desperation. It swung through eternity like a giant pendulum. And at the end of every arc, the universe was shattered by the sound of the tolling. I couldn't stand the noise. I let go on the tremendous upsweep and was catapulted through space at a terrifying, breathless speed. The ringing of the bell grew fainter and fainter. And then, there was quiet. I drifted peacefully for a while and landed as gently as a snowflake on a sparrow's wing. And I rested on cloud 8 in the blackness of complete oblivion.
Hey, Chiefy! Chiefy! You better come out of it!
Oh, go away, Hugo.
No, I'm sorry, Rogie, but you've got to get back on the ball or you're going to find yourself behind it. Come on now,
oh,
come on!
Oh, Hugo, go away! I'm not well. I've been hurt.
There are things going on that you ought to know about, Rogie.
I don't care. I'm on my vacation.
You're in trouble, Rogie. Bad trouble. Remember that dead girl?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember.
Well, what are you going to do about it? Let him get away with it?
Oh, I don't want to talk about it. Let me alone.
Well, I guess you've been hit on the head once too often, Rogie. Lost your nerve, huh?
What do you mean, midget?
No fight left in you. It's too bad.
I've got plenty of fight left in me. What's going on down there?
Well, you better go down and see, Rogie. Come on. I'll help you over the side.
Okay. Come on. Give me a push, Hugo. Oh, you're a fine alter ego, and I'm proud of you.
I try to take care of you, Chiefy. Over you go, Rogie. Over you go.
I dreaded opening my eyes because I remembered that dead girl lying there. But I opened them at last. And what I didn't see made me think I'd lost my mind. Where the body had lain, staining the Navajo rug, there was a Navajo rug, but no stain and no body. I wobbled to my feet. My knees were made of soup. I grabbed the bed for support and threw my massive intellect into high. There were strange things happening here, and they were happening to me. I decided to stay mum and get back to the dance to see what I could discover from the behavior of the inmates. I took out my pocket comb, dressed my hair around the bump on my head so I wouldn't look like I had two, wiped the bed and the doorknob clean of my fingerprints, and looking much better than I felt, rejoined the party. Clint was talking with Nancy Bowman, another luscious lady on the hotel social stamp.
Hello, Rogue. We've been looking for you.
Oh, hi, Clint. Hello, Nancy.
Hello, Richard. Where have you been?
We're getting a little fresh air. How about this dance, Nancy?
Can't. I promised Clint.
Oh, go ahead. I'll be noble. Janice should be coming back soon anyhow.
Well, all right then. You're on, Mr. Rogue.
Oh, for you, my dear. Both of them. See you later, Clint.
Bye.
You know, Nancy, that Clint's a lucky man getting a girl like Janice. She's what the boys in the back room call a dish.
I suppose Janice isn't lucky getting a man with a million.
Not my type. Now, I don't have the million, but...
Well, then let's just dance.
Oh.
Now that Janice has her millionaire, I'm out to get mine.
You girl's old friend?
No, I've worked up here with her summers for a couple of years. She's a grand girl. Everybody loves her.
She's engaged to this creep with the millions?
Yes, they're going to be married in 2 weeks. Don't you ever read the newspapers?
Oh, I guess it wasn't on the sport page.
Probably not. Though the way Janice stalked him, it could have been.
Kitty, 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 kitty.
May I cut in?
Hi, Frank. That's up to you, Richard.
Well, I never give up beautiful ladies to strangers.
You don't know Frank, the ladies' home companion?
That can be taken care of. Introduce me, Nancy.
Mr. Rogue, this is Frank Pitts, friend of Janice.
Oh, glad to know you, Mr. Pitts.
Thank you, Mr. Rogue. Where is Janice anyway? She promised me some Roombas tonight.
Well, she wasn't feeling very well. She went to her bungalow to get a little rest. Do you insist on cutting in?
Unless you have some very fine arguments against it.
Well, I guess I haven't. Nancy, I hope I'll see you later.
You will. This is a temporary thing, Rich.
Well, what happened to your dance, Rogue?
A man cut in on me.
Oh, that's Frank Pitts. He doesn't belong here, Rogue. It's all shoulders and no money.
Mm. I understand that he and Janice are old friends.
That's right. Frank Pitts has been in love with Janice for years. They're from the same town back east.
No kidding. Oh, well, he was in love with her too, huh?
Desperately. But I don't feel sorry for him. He's not good enough for a girl like Janice.
No, no, Clint, a girl's entitled to old friends. You seem to be the jealous type. No, I used to be a little like that about Betty Callahan.
I'm not jealous, Rogue. Just hate to see a girl like Janice making a fool of herself over a no-good like that Pitts. Ever since he arrived today, she's been moody and dejected.
Oh, that's
and...
the way it is. Oh, that's the way it is, huh? You and Janice had a spat over the old flame.
We
and...
did not. You're being most impolite, Mr. Rogue. Janice and I happen to be in love.
Rogue?
Yes?
There's a man outside who would like to talk with you for a minute.
Why?
It's most important, Mr. Rogue. Please come with me.
Okay, excuse me, Clint. Well, you look a little upset. What's the matter?
Oh, it's horrible. Horrible.
May I ask what you're talking about?
No, I can't tell you, Mr. Rogue. But in all my years in hotel management, this is the most terrible thing that's ever happened to me. Here he is, Mr. Mills. Mr. Mills is our district attorney, Mr. Rogue.
Oh, well, I'm glad to know you, Mr. Mills. What can I do for you?
You're Richard Rogue, the private investigator from Los Angeles?
That's right. Why?
Well, I'd like to talk with you, Ms. Rogue, about a murder.
Oh, yes. Why, sure, Mr. Mills. Always glad to lend my talents to law enforcement.
That's nice of you, Mr. Rogue, because you can help a lot on this case. Why did you murder Janice Cole?
We'll return to our story in just a moment. First, dandruff on the shoulders and coat collar of a well-groomed person is as out of place as snow in July. That's why so many persons who want to have a smart, well-groomed appearance use Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo regularly. For Fitch Shampoo has a special solvent action that dissolves unsightly dandruff. When you apply Fitch's to your hair and scalp before adding water, this solvent action goes to work. So it's important to remember not to wet your hair before the shampoo is applied. After massaging your scalp briskly for a few minutes, then apply water. An abundance of cleansing lather will form to carry away the dissolved dandruff. Then the lather rinses out easily and completely, leaves the hair immaculately clean without a trace of dandruff. Yes, Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo is a real aid to good grooming. Use it regularly. You can buy an economical bottle of Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo at your drug or toilet goods counter, or have a professional application at your beauty or barber shop. Now, back to Dick Powell as private investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. My guilty conscience was calling me names and giving me bad advice as I stole out of the ballroom of the DA. He had accused me of murder, and I knew who was murdered. I'd seen her in her bungalow, dead. Janice Cole. The DA was as quiet as a grave during that walk, and not a bit more cheerful. I made a couple of abortive attempts at conversation, but I might as well have been talking to a totem pole. I couldn't understand why he was heading for my bungalow until he opened the door, and I saw Janice lying there on that blood-stained Navajo rug, just as I'd seen her a half hour before in her own bungalow. I tried to say something, but the words couldn't get by the lump in my throat. I just stood there, my mouth hanging open, and my stomach frozen in the hangman's knot. I could feel the DA's eyes boring into the back of my head.
Well, Rogue, why'd you do it?
Well, I didn't. I didn't kill her.
How do you explain the fact that she was killed here in your cabin?
She wasn't.
Now, look, Rogue, you better organize yourself, huh? You're supposed to be a smart investigator. Give me a gun.
I haven't got it on me. It's in that drawer there.
Yeah, we found that one. This girl was shot to death with a .25 automatic.
Any prints on it?
We've got to take yours for comparison.
Am I under suspicion for this murder?
At the moment, that's all you're under. I fondly hope you'll be under arrest for it the next half hour.
Oh. You know, Mills, in a homicide, you usually have to have a motive. Hey, what's that? Why are you waving those newspaper clippings in my face? What are they?
The motive. You were blackmailing Miss Cole, Rogue. We found these clippings in your briefcase.
What do you mean I was blackmailing her? I didn't even know her.
Now, look, Rogue, you're smarter than that. Here's a whole envelope full of clippings covering Miss Cole's trial for the murder of her first husband back in Passaic, New Jersey. Her name was Jane Sherman then, and she was released for lack of evidence. Remember the trial?
Of course I do. Poisoning. But what's that...
So you found out that this Jane Sherman, now known as Janice Cole, was all set to marry $1 million. And you've been blackmailing
her. Oh, I don't know anything about it, I tell you. I don't know how those clippings got into my briefcase. It must have been planted there when I was knocked out in Janice's bungalow.
It's a switch, Rogue. You were knocked out in her bungalow, eh? When?
Look, Mills, I know this whole thing's going to sound fantastic, but I want to tell you the whole story. I came up here on my vacation. I never saw Janice Cole or whatever her name was before tonight. Disbelief walked across the DA's face as I unspun the web of circumstances which tied me into this murder. As I listened to my own story, I knew I wouldn't believe it myself if I hadn't been there. I showed him the bump on my noggin. He just nodded. I talked on, and as I talked, I realized that I was acting like every murderer I'd ever questioned. I know my face was red, my eyes were shifting as I browbeat my brain into trying to think of some circumstance which would at least give me the benefit of a reasonable doubt. Finally, I stopped talking. He took my fingerprints, and we went to Janice Cole's bungalow. There, I got my first break.
All right, Rogue. Now, where was the body lying when you first saw it?
Right here. Right here. Come here. Look here. Look under this rug.
Uh-huh.
And blood on the floor where it seeped through the rug that's now in my bungalow. Do you see it?
Yeah. Blood, all right. Well, Rogue, that's the first thing that's made sense since we got together. I suppose there is an outside chance that somebody's trying to frame you.
Enough of a chance so a conviction would be hard to get, Mr. D.A. Look, you know me. I've got a little standing in my profession, a little substance. Give me 24 hours to get this thing hung around the right man's neck.
All right. If I don't have you locked up tonight, will you try and have the right man for me in the morning?
I'll have him. Now, tell me, who knows about the murder?
Well, the maid who went into your cottage to turn your bed down for the night, and the manager. Though I've told them both to keep quiet until I give them the go-ahead to talk.
Then none of the guests know about it yet, except the killer.
That's right. As far as I know.
Okay, Mills. Okay, now. You keep it that way until morning, and I'll come up with a guilty man for you. Big talk. I had been framed with loving care, like a sweetheart's picture. The DA shoved off to take care of the grisly details of moving the body from its temporary resting place on my bungalow floor, and I started shaking Janice Cole's bungalow down. There were particles of curved glass on the floor near where the body had been lying. I picked them up carefully and fitted the larger pieces together. They could only have been the crystal of a small, square wristwatch. It might be the clue to the killer.
I went back to the main hotel building. The Saturday night party was still going strong. I rejoined the merry throng and looked for Frank. He seemed to me to be the logical suspect. He was from Janice Cole's hometown. He would have known about her trial for murder. I found him talking with Nancy in a corner, and he had on a large, round wristwatch. Nancy's watch was a dainty diamond and ruby affair, small and oblong.
Hello, Rogue. Nancy's been beating the bushes looking for you.
No, I have not. I just was mildly curious about where you disappeared to. I wanted to get rid of Frank and finish that dance with you.
Wow. This is as good a time as any. May I have the next one?
You may have all the rest of them if you like. What's the matter, Richard? You have a pensive look.
Well, I was just trying to figure something out.
Oh?
I was supposed to have a dance with you at 9 o'clock. Where were you?
I was here. I got here just at 9, didn't I, Frank?
Don't try to prove anything by me, baby. I don't know. At 9 o'clock, I was having a drink with Clint Hayes in my bungalow.
Hmm. Well, there goes your alibi, Nancy. You weren't here.
Alibi? Why would I need an alibi? I was here, you weren't. I looked all over for you.
Oh, now, let's not argue about it. Let's have the next one, huh? I'll be right back.
Okay. No tricks now.
Hi, Clint.
What?
Oh, how come you're sitting this one out?
Oh, I, Hello, Rogue.
Well, I'm sorry I startled you.
I was just in a deep fog.
Hmm? Nancy come back yet?
No.
Nancy, I just changed her name there, if you don't mind. Yeah. I'm kind of worried about her.
Well, she's subject to headaches like this, poor kid.
Maybe you'd better run over and have a talk with her, huh?
Oh, I hate to bother her when she's feeling bad.
Look, Clint, just to settle a little argument. Yeah. Were you and Frank Pitts having a drink in his bungalow at 9 o'clock?
Oh, yes, matter of fact, we were. How'd you know that?
He just told me. Just a silly little argument.
I wish Janice would hurry back in time for the last dance, at least.
Clint Hayes had on a large, square wristwatch. And he and Frank had unbreakable alibis. Nancy had none. They were my three prime suspects, and it looked to me like Nancy was about to be elected. I was sitting there looking for Nancy and carrying on a pointless discussion on headaches, their cause and cure, with Clint, when Nancy came running over.
Come on, Clint. You too, Richard. We're all going down to the pool for a moonlight dip.
No, I don't think I want to, Nancy.
Oh, come on. Just because Janice is feeling rocky tonight is no reason for you to be grumpy. Come on, Richard. Get your swim trunks and give the girls a treat.
All right. I'm in. Come on, Clint. A little dip or do you guys?
No, I don't think I...
Oh, come on, Clint.
Oh, might as well, Clint. Sounds like a good idea, doesn't it?
Well, Nancy, we got it all organized.
Yes. Richard and Clint are crazy about the idea, aren't you?
Oh, okay. I'll join you for a while.
Nice man, Clint. Hurry up now. See you at the pool.
We'll continue our story in just a moment. First, a word to the ladies. Are you planning to have a new permanent to help you achieve that cool, crisp look this summer? If you are, here's a good point to remember. Shampooing with Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo will put your hair into grand condition for that cold wave or permanent. That's because Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo is such a thorough cleansing agent. It gets the hair immaculately clean and dandruff-free. Then, since it's completely soluble in water, it rinses out easily, leaving no dull, soapy film. Your hair is left radiant with no dirt, dandruff, or soapy film clinging to the hair strands to obstruct the work of the waving solution. Yes, permanent wave equipment manufacturers, such as the Realistic Permanent Wave Machine Company, E. Frederick Incorporated, and Duart Manufacturing Company, all agree that really clean hair is the first requisite to a successful permanent wave. For a soft, natural-looking wave, prepare your hair first with Fitch, F-I-T-C-H, Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo. Then use Fitch's regularly to keep your wave looking lovely. Now back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
My performance in the pool that night made Nero's fiddle solo in the light of a burning room seem like the height of propriety. Here was Richard, the fall guy rogue, swimming and laughing with Frank, Clint, and Nancy, a bunch of murder suspects. A matter of hours before the law put a pair of stylishly plain bracelets on me and claimed me for its own if I hadn't solved the murder of Janice Cole. But there was method in my madness. That swim gave me the information I wanted. In fact, it gave me the murderer. I left before the swimming party broke up and went to one of the guest bungalows,
An open window made the job of getting in as easy as falling in love. I found what I was looking for in a chest of drawers. Then I sat down and waited for my victim to come in and turn on the lights.
Rogue, what are you doing here?
Waiting to talk with you about a murder, Clint. Shut the door. Come in and sit down, Clint. I want to know all about what happened to Janice.
Janice? Something's happened to Janice?
Yes, Janice, and don't act so innocent. What do you know about her murder?
Well, I didn't kill her. What makes you think I killed her?
I didn't say you killed her, but I'm sure you know something about it. You know, you shouldn't get involved in murder, Clint. It's too complicated.
But you're just talking, Rogue. You killed her. You were blackmailing her and you killed her.
Clint. You weren't supposed to know anything about that. In fact, you couldn't have known anything about it unless you were the guy who framed me so nicely. I'm a little mad at you for that, you know. I'm going to get a confession of that murder out of you some way or other. Now, do you feel like talking, or do I have to beat it out of you?
What makes you think I did it, Rogue?
Take off your wristwatch. Now, look at your wrist.
What?
You see that small square of white skin where you used to wear your small square wristwatch? That was the giveaway, Clint. You see this watch here, the one I found hidden under the shirts in that chest of drawers there? The crystal's broken, Clint. And it was broken in the struggle with Janice tonight just before you shot her. The broken glass was found on the floor of the cabin right where the body was before you moved it to mine. Now, do you feel any more like talking, Clint? Why did you kill her?
I didn't kill her. Hmm?
I got until morning for you to start talking, and I've got more socks and a 10-story laundry. Now, let me know when you want to start singing. You know what happened in that room, and you're going to tell me.
I didn't kill her. I didn't, I swear. I didn't, Rogue. I was there. Sure, I was there, but
well,
I...
You didn't kill her. Who did?
I can't tell you.
Come on, Clint. You're not smart enough to work out that frame on me. Who was in this with you?
I wouldn't answer that if I were you, Frank. Drop the gun, Rogue.
Oh. Oh, hello, Frank. Well, you're mixed up in this too, huh? Well, maybe we can arrange a double execution.
I didn't tell him anything, Frank. I didn't tell him a thing.
I know it. I was listening. Sit down, Rogue.
Sure. Glad to. You were the brains of this deal, weren't you, Frank?
It's pretty obvious that quivering mess over there wasn't, isn't it? It's a good thing I was keeping my eye on him tonight. You see, Rogue, when he opened the door and turned on the lights, I saw you sitting there, and that's why I came in the back way. I was afraid that Clint would talk too much.
You think of everything, don't you?
I try.
What are we going to do now, Frank? This Rogue, he knows I was there when Janice was murdered.
Knows you were there? Well, you might just as well know that you shot her then, huh? You did, you know.
Well, it was an accident.
Was it? I'll decide that.
Aren't you forgetting me, fellas?
Oh, no. No, we're not forgetting you, Mr. Rogue. It really doesn't make any difference who killed Janice as long as you disappear with all the evidence pointing to the fact that you did it.
No, Frank. I don't want any more killing.
Shut up. I'm handling this affair. I'm going to keep you out of the gas chamber, Clint, if you'll just shut up and do as I tell you. Take Rogue's necktie off and tie his hands. We're going to knock him off and throw him over a canyon where he'll never be found.
You are? Well, I might as well take a crack at it. Give me that gun.
Grab him, Clint. Grab him.
Well, thanks, Clint. You were very handy with that chair. How come you hit him?
I couldn't let him kill you. I just couldn't.
All right. Take his necktie off and tie his hands with it. We're going to take him for a ride down to see the district attorney.
I killed her, Rogue. I killed Janice, but it was an accident. I swear it was an accident.
Well, you'll have a dandy chance to explain that to a jury, Clint. Now, come here. I've got something for you.
Oh!
That's for helping to frame me. Oh, brother, is that DA gonna love me? Well, that was the end of the case. Frank had been blackmailing Janice Cole ever since her engagement to wealthy playboy Clint Hayes was announced. And that night, when Frank went to Janice's cabin, Clint followed him. When Clint arrived on the scene, jealousy took over. Frank drew a gun, and Clint jumped him. In the struggle which followed, Janice was shot while the gun was in Clint's hand. Helpful Frank, the cues scared Clint of the murder and talked him into framing me. Frank saw lovely visions of many happy years of blackmailing a millionaire. That broken watch crystal was the only thing that kept the frame from working. So I get my brains beat out. I put the arm on a killer and blackmailer. My vacation is broken up like a drop light bulb. And I didn't make a dime. Oh, well. Let's face it, if I hadn't been so clever, I'd be doing a life sentence instead of Clinton Frank.
I would like that.
No. I've heard I've heard that stone walls do not a prison make, nor iron bars a cage. But it's hard to illustrate the truth of that old saw to a guy who's behind the former looking through the latter. You know what I mean? This is Dick Mushmouth Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed our story tonight. Ray Buffum wrote it. Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and D. Engelbach produced and directed. Be with us again next Sunday, will you? We have a story for you about a doctor, a dentist, and a miserly old lady who comes up dead. We call it, Where There's a Will, There's a Murder. Thanks for listening, and now here's James with a hair Doyle.
Listen again next week at this same time to hear Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. And by the way, Dick will soon be seen in his newest Columbia picture, Johnny O'Clock.
Clap a while, let a song be your style. Use Fitch shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair. Use Fitch shampoo.
After and between Fitch shampoos, you can keep your hair shining and manageable by using a few drops of Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic every day. Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic is not sticky or greasy, yet it gives your hair that well-groomed look.